Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, this is Julia Carver. Welcome to the John Carver Show. My dad has helped thousands of people around the world lead happier and more successful lives. Whether you're just beginning to lay your foundation or you already built your life, but now you need to shore up some weak spots, this show will help you.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
So today's text I'm calling What Now? What Now? It is really kind of like the polar opposite of last week's text, the polar opposite. Over in Psalm chapter number 27, Psalm 27, it says, "The Lord is my light and my salvation. Whom shall I fear? The Lord is a stronghold of my life. Of whom shall I be afraid?" Remember when you were a kid, maybe you had situations where you had bullies in your life or knew of a bully, and the one that would stand closest to you, that may be bigger than the bully, gave you courage because your friend, who was as strong or stronger than the bully, gave you the courage to keep walking down the hall when the bully was attacking the other kids. In 1 Corinthians chapter 10, there's a couple of words in the text that bring attention to my situation, and I think to many of our situations. In 1 Corinthians chapter 10, verse number 13, it says, "No temptation has overtaken you that's not common to man." Let me just pause and stop right there. That there's very few things that we go through in life that's unique, because people before us have gone through the same situation, possibly a lot worse than we are, and overcome those situations. Again, no temptation has overtaken you that is not common to man. God is faithful, and he will not let you be tempted beyond your ability, this text says. But with temptation, he will also provide the way of escape that you may be able to endure it. Sometimes, when we're tempted, the temptation doesn't jump out at us and grab us by the tonsils, does it? The temptation is a temptation because we want what is tempting us. Does that make any sense? I've shared on many occasions some of my temptations, and some of them revolve around certain types of food. So I purposely don't buy food, that types of food. Or some days I give in to temptation and buy the Krispy Kremes and the potato chips because I want to give in to the temptation. There is a way of escape, that is, not stop by the store that sells these items or avoid the aisles in the store that sells these items. But for one reason or another, and I'll come up with several excuses, well, I'll share them with the kids, or I'll only have a little bit here and there, or I'm not going to eat the whole bag. But if it's in the house, if the temptation is near you, guess what? It is tempting to give in to the temptation. So oftentimes, the point is we welcome the temptation, we welcome the struggle, we welcome the difficulty. In fact, we buy the difficulty and bring it right into our lives when we shouldn't be even thinking about bringing that into our lives at all. Oftentimes, you and I and the people in our lives many times believe that no one has ever struggled with the specific struggles that you're struggling with right now. Because it's often tempting to look in the mirror and say, you know, I'm the only one. I'm the only one who's ever gone through this struggle. Or I'm the only one who's ever had this great difficulty, this difficult time, this time of frustration and wanting to throw in the towel. I'm the only one. But I can guarantee you that you are not the only one who's gone through this. There's a story that Gary Richmond shared, and it's been shared publicly a number of times. But he said he tells a story about how a giraffe is born. He said the first things to emerge are the baby giraffe's front hooves and head. He said a few minutes after that, the newborn is hurled forth, falls 10 feet, and lands on its back. Thank God we're not giraffes, and our babies aren't dropping 10 feet to land on its back, right? Within seconds, he rolls to an upright position with his legs tucked under his body, the story says. From this position, he considers the world for the first time, and then he shakes himself. The mother giraffe lowers her head long enough to take a quick look, right? Then she positions herself directly over her calf, her newborn baby calf that just dropped 10 feet, literally, right? She waits for a minute or so, then she does the most unreasonable thing. If it was a human baby, it would be called abuse. But she swings her long leg toward the baby and kicks her baby, so the baby tumbles head over heels several times. A newborn baby just dropped 10 feet, just breathed its first breath. When it doesn't get up, the violent process is repeated over and over again, so the struggle to rise is instantaneous because the mom keeps kicking the giraffe over and over again. So as the baby calf grows tired, the mother kicks it again to stimulate its efforts, and finally the calf stands for the first time on its wobbly legs. And then the mother giraffe does the most remarkable thing. She kicks it off its feet again, just after it got up on its feet for the very first time. But see, she wants the little baby calf to remember how to get up again. And I often think that sometimes life is like that mother giraffe. It seems like stuff happens, you just get on your feet again, and boom, you get knocked across the head again. Or a short period of time after, things are going really well. I'm talking a very short time. It's like you get hit, you get smacked in the face again. And you get punched in the face, you get punched in the gut, you get punched in the gut. It seems like you just can't seem to get your bearings right to keep going, to keep moving forward. Well, this story is really telling you and I that life is all about getting back up again. And even though it's really difficult to get back up again, life is all about getting knocked down and remembering to get back up. In fact, sometimes you have to remember how to get back up in different ways. Because depending on the situation, you're not going to get up in the same way every time, because each situation's not the same way. Over in 2 Corinthians 4, it says, God will not leave you. It says, we're hunted down, but never abandoned by God. We've been knocked down, but we're not destroyed. Getting knocked down and being destroyed are two different things. Getting knocked down can be temporary. Getting destroyed is permanent. But it says right here that we're never abandoned by God. We're not destroyed. Margaret Thatcher said one time, standing in the middle of the road is very dangerous. Very dangerous. She says you get knocked down by the traffic from both sides. So I think it's really important that when you and I get knocked down, that we have to get up as quick as possible. Because the longer that we stay down, the temptation to stay down goes up exponentially. Because you get tired, you get weak. Have you ever been sick? You've had the flu or a virus or something, and you've been in bed for a period of time or at home recovering or something, and it's so hard to get going again to the pace that you were used to, that is, you know, fast, 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 because you've been so used to sitting and so used to vegging and so used to, because you don't have the energy to do it. Whereas in the middle of your virus, in the middle of your struggle, you force yourself to do the stuff that you don't feel like doing, and then you're going to find many times, not all the time, but many times you recover quicker because, again, it takes a much longer time to get back on your feet when you stay off your feet. And that could be mentally, too, by the way. That doesn't have to be just because you get sick. Last week I shared the end of Hebrews chapter 11, but I want to go back to the beginning of that chapter. I shared what didn't happen, but I want to share what did happen in the first part of Hebrews chapter 11. Now, the beginning of the text says that it gives a definition of what faith is. And the long and short of it is faith means, according to this writer, is to see things that aren't there, but they're as real as you and I. The actual script says, Faith is the substance of things hoped for and the evidence of things not seen. That's one way to say that. But if you skip down to verse number 4 in that same chapter, it says, "By faith Abel offered to God a better sacrifice than Cain, through which he obtained the testimony that he was righteous." I'm reading from the New American Standard. "And then God testifying about his gifts, and through faith, though he was dead, he still speaks." Again, we have the option to do stuff when we do good stuff when we don't see the end result. Because faithfulness, I believe, carries a tremendous amount of weight in God's eyes. If you go down to verse 5, it says in verse number 5, "By faith Enoch," now I'm not going to get into the long story, but "by faith Enoch was taken up so that he would not see death, and he was not found because God took him, for he obtained the witness that before his being taken up he was pleasing to God. And without faith," verse 6 says, "and without faith it is impossible to please him," or God, "for he who comes to God must first believe that he is, and that he is rewarder of those who seek him." Let's back up and slow that verse down just a bit, because that is one of the foundations, I think, of many Christians' lives. Verse number 6. Without faith, it is impossible to please God. Let me just stop and let's let that sink in a minute. Without faith, it's impossible to please God. So when you and I live in doubt, when you and I live in disbelief, when you and I live in fear, I'm reading into this text. I could be completely wrong here, but when we live in those negative habits, then we must not be pleasing God. That's how I read it. Maybe I'm reading too much into it, but I don't think so. Again, without faith, it is impossible to please God. For he who comes to God must first believe that he is, that he exists, and that he is a rewarder of those who seek him. I can tell you firsthand through my life that many, many times, many blessings have come my way, not because I've earned anything, not because I have not really done much or that I'm a wonderful human being. I'm not saying that at all. I'm saying that because, and I'll be extremely candid with you right now, as I have been for years, that many times that I can only speak for me. But when you have no other options, the only option sometimes you have is God. I mean, when all your other possibilities, you go down the list, nope. You know, God should be up top, but if you feel my pain and know where I'm going through, what you're going through, oftentimes you come up with all these other options and God's last. I wonder why we put God last instead of God first. That's a whole new sermon. We're not going to go there. Verse number 7. Now think about this. Old Testament tells a story about a guy named Noah. Noah, according to my study, was a guy who had a few sons, and he lived in a very rural area where he was not around water. Okay, so let's kind of start there. It says, "By faith, Noah, being warned by God about things not yet seen, in reverence prepared an ark for the salvation of his household, by which he condemned the world and became an heir of the righteousness which is according to faith." Now, for those who don't know the story, let me just quickly say it. Noah was an older guy, and he heard God tell him to build this massive boat because there was going to be a massive flood that will come to his land and destroy everything, people, animals, everything. There's no water around there. I mean, it's not like he lived on a dock or lived at the beach. That's not what I understand. In fact, what happened had never happened before. Oftentimes we're challenged, I think the broader point is, oftentimes we're challenged to believe things that have never happened before, that are extraordinary, that are situations in our lives that we can't even imagine, but yet we're challenged through Scripture and through life to embrace the impossible. Because again, it goes back to what I said up in verse 6. "And without faith it is impossible to please him, for he who comes to God must believe that he is, and that he is a rewarder of those who seek him." Now, we're not even done this particular piece of the scripture. But over and over it shares examples of all these people that have done stuff good stuff, extraordinary stuff that didn't make sense at the time. That did not make sense at the time. And I've shared many stories about our lives and some of your lives, how you've done stuff that at the time didn't make sense. But looking back now, I say, oh, now I understand why I had this hunch or this desire or this love in my heart to make a difference in other people's lives. Okay? So we go down to verse number 8 in the same chapter. Now it says, when by faith Abraham, when he was called, obeyed by going out to a place which he was to receive for an inheritance, and he went out not knowing where he was going. Verse 9, by faith he lived as an alien in the land of promise, as in a foreign land, dwelling in tents with Isaac and Jacob, fellow heirs of the same promise. For he was looking for the city which has foundations, whose architect and builder is God. Now, again, for context, for those who don't know the story, this guy, in fact, his name at the time was Abram, A-B-R-A-M. Abram lived in this town called Ur, U-R, and it's still, at least, I think it still exists, or at least a form of it still exists. Well, he felt a call, he felt a hunch, he felt a God telling him that he needs to leave this town with his family, and that he was to go to a place that he really didn't know where he was going. He was just told to go. I think oftentimes, and I'll repeat this multiple times, that we're challenged to do things that oftentimes don't make sense for the benefit of other people, because we can't see the broader picture. We can't see the big picture. Have you ever been involved in a painting or a drawing when your job is to only circle one little part or color in one little part, and you really don't understand what the whole thing is? You know, I kind of liken it to being in the Army. When you're in combat and your job, you're told by the person above you that you are to do X, you can't see the whole story. You have no clue what's happening in the next town or back at home or anything like that. Your boss tells you to do X. And for me, just how I'm wired, I want to know the whole story. I want to see the big picture. I want to see how my ex is impacting the whole scene. That's not how God works. That's not how Christianity works, at least my understanding of Christianity. Because God only gives me a little piece and says, I want you to do this and trust me to do all this. I'm not comfortable. I'm trying to choose my words carefully. I'm not comfortable with that, with his system. I've never been comfortable with his system, as if I have a choice in the matter, because all I see is my little X. All I see is my little spot that I'm supposed to paint blue, or I'm supposed to color in blue or red or yellow or green. And God says, then I'm going to have Susie Q and Roberto and Sam over here and color in the other. And then in time, you're going to see that what I called you to do is just a piece of the puzzle. Mm-hmm. So when you and I choose not to do our part because of fear, because of intimidation, because of doubt, because of anxiety, because of not seeing the whole picture, then it not only impacts our little X, but guess what? It impacts other people's lives and other people's situations because we're afraid. Now let's flip the same coin. Sometimes we haven't been able to embrace many or some or maybe most of the blessings of God, because there have been other people who have chosen not to do their ex or paint in their part of the scene because they're afraid or they're intimidated. Or like me, they want to see the whole picture, when that's not really how life really, really works. Now jump down to verse number 11 in the same chapter. Now this story talks about, or this piece talks about Abram's, who his name was changed to Abraham, his wife. It says, by faith even Sarah herself received ability to conceive, even beyond the proper time of life, since she considered God faithful who had promised. Stop the picture. Stop the movie. A little bit, actually several years prior to that, Abraham and Sarai were told that they were going to be parents. They were senior citizens. They were collecting Social Security checks, if you will. I mean, they were long since retired. I mean, I don't know too many retired folks still having babies, okay? I just don't. I mean, you know, after about 40, 45, you're tired, man. You know, there's no way you have the energy to chase around babies, that's for sure. So, in fact, when God told Sarah, when Sarah heard that she was going to get pregnant, she laughed her head off. Like, you got to be smoking something, right? She didn't use those words, but she was cracking up because she didn't see the possibility. And I think we're not so different from Sarah. Because when we don't see the possibility, then we immediately put up a wall, kind of sort of mentally, that this is not possible because it's never happened before. How many times haven't you not embraced stuff or not embraced opportunities or not embraced promises or not embraced possibilities because it's never happened before? At least you don't know that it's happened before. It probably has happened before, but you're not God and you can't see what God's trying to do in your life. Because the verse continues. Since she considered him faithful who had promised, verse 12, therefore she was born even of one man and him as good as dead. Talking about Abraham. And that as many descendants as the stars of heaven in number and innumerable as the sand by which the seashore. So the story goes down and continues in a variety of places that they had a son. And that son went on to have sons and daughters, and eventually that turned into millions of people because of a promise, because of the embracing of a promise. And I can tell you firsthand that embracing a promise is not easy when you can't see the potential or the possibility of the promise. I wish I could go deeper into that. A guy named Zig Ziglar says, getting knocked down is a given in life. Getting up and moving forward is a choice. Getting up and moving forward is a choice. The same chapter goes down to verse 17. Now, Abram and Sarah had this boy named Isaac, and he grew up. So one day, God comes to Abraham and told him, he says, look, I'll want you to take your only son that I promised you, and I want you to sacrifice your only son. I mean, literally, like, kill and burn. I mean, Old Testament stuff. This son that I told was going to be yours and was going to be a descendant and was going to change the whole landscape. So in verse 17, it says, by faith Abraham, when he was tested, he offered up Isaac, and he who had received the promises was offering up his only begotten son. It was he whom it was said, in Isaac your descendants shall be called. So in verse 19, it says, he considered that God is able to raise people even from the dead, from which he also received him back as a type. So verse 20, by faith, and then it goes on to talk about Isaac and Esau. But then it talks about here, actually the scene, is God promised Isaac to Abram and Sarah. God tested Abraham and said, you know what, I know that I promised you this, but I want you to at least make the attempt. He didn't tell Abraham this, but the attempt was to sacrifice or to give Isaac back to God. How many times haven't you been handed stuff and you want to hoard it, you want to embrace it, you want to keep it to yourself, you don't want to let it out of your hands because you don't want to offer it back to God or to potentially lose that blessing. And again, we all have examples in our lives. And this whole chapter 11, just goes on and on and on about all these people. In verse 23, talks about Moses and how Moses' mom found out that the king called Pharaoh was killing all these babies. So she did something that was insane. She put her baby in this river that was full of wild baby-eating animals. I mean, to me, that makes zero sense. I mean, Child Protective Services would have been called in if that happened nowadays, for sure, right? But then, you know, she did this by faith, and then, as we all know, or most of us know the story, Moses turned out to be from a fearful guy to a murderer to a leader to a guy who we're still talking about 3,000, 4,000 years later because of so many things that went on that he eventually, after getting talked it into many times, embraced what his little X was in that frame. Because at the time, Moses didn't see how his little X, his little corner of that frame, was going to make any difference at all, because he looked at what he couldn't do versus what God could do through him. There's a song that's been out for a few years called "Get Back Up," and that song really talks about that when you, in fact, let me just share a couple of the words. It says, "You turned away when I looked you in the eye and hesitated when I asked you if you were all right. Seems like you're fighting for your life, but why, oh why? Wide awake in the middle of the nightmare, you saw it coming, but it hit you out of nowhere, and there's always scars when you fall back far." So the chorus says, we lose our way. Most of us have lost our way multiple times, right? But we get back up again. It's never too late, the song says, to get back up again. One day you will shine again. You may get knocked down, but not out forever. You lose your way, we get back up again. So get up, you're going to shine again. Never too late to get back up again. It just goes on and on and repeats that, you know, when you get knocked down, you have a choice to stay down. You have a choice to cry and complain. You have a choice to whine. You have a choice to throw in the towel. And all those emotions happen to most of us. I don't know of any human being where that emotion or those emotions haven't hit us at one time or another. But for you and I to get back up again in the middle of the stuff takes a tremendous amount of strength. It takes a tremendous amount of power. Christopher Lanham writes, the pit bull, he says, as you know, is bred to be a fighter. But what you may not know is what they were originally bred to fight with. The pit bull is actually a mutt that made good, he said. A mutt that made good. Having a terrier and mastiff breeds in its line, from the mastiff side of the tree, they are descendant from bulldogs, which in pre-industrial England were farm dogs. You know that they were used for to protect the farmer from the bull when he was trying to feed and castrate and breed the bull. If a bull turned to gore the farmer, the bulldog would subdue the bull by, quote, biting the bull on the nose and holding on until the bull submitted. Because of the nature of the job, the bulldogs were bred to be powerful and muscular and have muscular bodies. And the resolve to hold on to the violently struggling bull even when injured. So he said, the author goes on to say, he says, that's the sort of picture that Paul is drawing for Timothy in the new part of the Testament. Here with the words that we need to keep and entrust, he says, and to guard the gospel, to hold on to it. Because oftentimes life throws us so many curveballs that we just want to drop it, or stuff happens so fast at us that we do drop it. I'm sure you and I have been scared in the past when sudden calamity comes your way or difficulties come your way, and out of panic and out of shock, you just drop stuff. It's happened to most of us. You know, I go back to thinking about this guy in the Old Testament. Think about a lot of people in the Old Testament. But this one particular guy stands out to me a lot these days. His name's Job, and it's spelled J-O-B. So for us in the United States, that's spelled Job, but his name was actually Job. Job lived several thousand years ago. Job was very wealthy, very wealthy. And I'm not going to go into the whole text of it, but he lost everything, not just once, but a couple of times. He lost everything. So all his, not all, but some of his friends were like, dude, you know, throw in the towel, forget this. And Job, again, it's a very long story, but Job hung in there despite the stuff that was happening around him. I'm talking substantial stuff. Now, I don't know any human being in my career that have had the stuff that Job had happen to him. I just don't know of anybody. So he went through multiple stuff, lost everything, and yet he stood his ground, even though he was in a couple of different types of pain. Have you ever been in a couple of different types of pain, and every fiber in your body wants to react in certain ways? Am I the only one? I don't think I'm the only one here. That we react, that we want to react in certain ways, and it's so close to the edge of your tongue, and sometimes it does slip out. Sometimes it comes out in certain ways, and maybe it's a good way, maybe it's a bad way, somewhere it's in between, I don't know. But the temptation is to give up on, listen, the temptation is to give up on all that you know and embrace everything that you're feeling at the moment. I'll say it again. Oftentimes it's tempting to give up on all you know and embrace what you're feeling at the moment. Because what you're feeling at the moment is what you're feeling at the moment, not what you know that has come through you and you've brought yourself through and God's brought you through in the past. Somebody said, I don't know how accurate it is, but he said that it came to pass. Les Brown says that a lot. That it came to pass. Things that happen are happen and they're gonna pass. Do I believe all that all the time? No. Do I struggle with that? Yes. But oftentimes, I'll say it for the third or fourth time, oftentimes we forget what we know and we embrace what we feel. Because feelings sometimes are more powerful than what we know. Again, feelings are more powerful than what we know. 2 Corinthians 4 says this. I think I said it before, but we're afflicted in every way, but not crushed. 2 Corinthians 4, verse 8. We're afflicted in every way, but not crushed. We're perplexed, he says, but not driven to despair. We're persecuted, he said, but not forsaken. We're struck down, but not destroyed. And there's a variety of ways that we can say that. In Psalm 23, we, as kids maybe, were taught the 23rd Psalm. But there's one little piece in there that has jumped out to me multiple times over the years. It's verse 4, Psalm 23:4. It says, even though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death. Again, even though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death. When I'm sitting in the valley of the shadow of death, or when I'm taking a nap in the valley of the shadow of death, or when I'm building a house in the valley of the shadow of death. It doesn't say that at all. It says, even though I walk, which means you're going through it, right? You're moving in another direction. Even though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, it says, I will fear no evil, for you, or God, is with me. Your rod and your staff, they comfort me. The tools, in this context, in this psalm, it's referring to a shepherd. And in that culture, a rod and a staff was there to keep the sheep safe from the wolves and the wild animals and the bears and the lions from trying to take away and kill the sheep. So it says that even though I walk through the valley, this low place of the shadow, and it's dark, and you can't see too much, you don't know the details of it because it's so dim, that it says here that God will be with me. Now, this is a shepherd writing this who has probably walked in this situation a variety of times and probably in a variety of different ways. That I think if we pull the context out of this in our own lives, that we can say, you know what, there's been situations in our lives that we've gone through the valley of the shadow of death, and that even in the valley of the shadow, God's still there. Whatever you're going through, we have to understand that God's in the middle of your valley. God's in the middle of your shadow. God's in the middle of your scary time. But it says here that your staff, your rod and your staff, they comfort me. That is God's power. God's tools are there at my side or close by, that God's going to protect me in the middle of my stuff. Even though it hurts, even though it's terrifying, even though it's intimidating, even though my emotions are all over the place, it says right here that they are going to, God's tools are going to comfort me. Bill Hybels tells about an interesting story. Bill's a pastor of a large church in Illinois. He tells a story about an interesting experience after a baptism at his church. He writes, I bumped into this gal in the stairwell who was crying, and I thought that was a little odd since the service was so joyful. I asked her if she was all right. She says, no, I'm struggling, she said. My mom was baptized today. I prayed for her every day for almost 20 years. The reason I'm crying is because I came this close to giving up on her. At the 5-year mark, I'm thinking, like, who needs this? God isn't listening. At the 10-year mark, I said, why am I wasting my breath? At the 15-year mark, I said, this is absurd. At the 19-year mark, I said, I'm just a fool. But as I kept trying, I kept praying, even with weak faith, I kept praying. Interesting. Then she surrendered her life to Jesus, and she was baptized today. She says, I'll never doubt the power of prayer again. I just talked about this in the opposite extreme last week. I don't understand God. And we're not going to get to last week, but I still don't understand God. Sometimes when we pray, we feel like we're experiencing what's called the law of diminished returns. You know, you pray and pray and pray and pray, and then you stop praying. Oh, if I just had a magic wand. If I was a Harry Potter, man, answereth prayereth or something I would do, and everybody's prayers would be answered. That's not how God does stuff. 2 Corinthians chapter 10, starting in verse 3, Paul says this. In 2 Corinthians chapter 10, verse 3, it says, for though we walk in the flesh, and now this is a fancy way of saying, because we have skin on our bodies, we're not spirits or we're not angels, we're just human beings. For though we walk in the flesh, we're not waging war according to the flesh, to skin and bone. He says, for the weapons of our warfare are not of the flesh, but have divine power, this text says, to destroy strongholds. We destroy arguments and every lofty opinion raised against the knowledge of God and take every thought captive to obey Christ. Again, there's a variety of ways of saying this, but his context or his theme really is that life is more than what we see. Because most of what we see is so temporary. It's so short term. I mean, you figure a lot of us are only here for 80, 90 years if we're lucky. Humanity and the universe has been in here for, I don't know, a lot longer than that. So as I've said here multiple times, we're here just for a flicker. Just for a flicker. Whereas humanity and the divinity and the universe and the galaxy and all these other adjectives have been here for so long. So the stuff that we're the context of this verse is what we're battling against in our brains and in our hearts and in our lives, according to Paul, is more than what we see. In fact, most of what we're battling is stuff that we can't even see. That's my paraphrase of that text. A guy named Bishop Abraham writes, as someone aptly stated, Jesus does not want to be resident in you. He wants to be president in you. Yes, when we relinquish our struggles, he says, and find our rest, then the winds of the storm may blow, but we find ourselves fixed upon the rock. Fixed upon the rock. You know, there have been many times when a few of the kids, maybe just a couple of the kids, would get scared because of wind storms, because we live up on almost a mile up on our road. So the winds come over the mountaintop pretty quick, and the vortexes, and I don't know how to describe it all, but it gets pretty windy up there. And we're surrounded by trees, and there, at least a couple of them in the past, have been very anxious when the winds would blow, because they were afraid that the trees or a tree would fall into the house. But see, they don't know that I know that the chances of that happening is very low, because I know the statistics, at least in my own brain, to keep me to sleep at night, to know that during a windstorm, the chances of a tree falling on the house is very small, like getting struck by lightning. It's a very small chance. So I can rest easy. We go back to what David said in Psalm 23. Even though I go through the valley of the shadow of death, I'm not going to fear because of what's around me, because of what God has around me, the rod and the staff he talks about, that is there to protect me in the middle of the stuff. It's not always easy to see that. Over in Philippians number 4, Paul went through a variety of situations in his life. He was a very anti-Christ guy. He fought the new Christian faith that was still very young, just a few years old, and his job was to fight against it and really to kill all these people that called themselves Christians, or in that text that were called the way, that they were going to walk in the way. So in Philippians chapter 4 verse 12, Paul went through some stuff. He went through some struggles. He was beat. He was abused. He was shipwrecked. He was tortured. He went through a whole bunch of other stuff because he then converted from being an antichrist to a pro-Christ. Okay, and we're not getting into why or how. That's not the point here. So in Philippians 4, verse 12, it says, I know how to be brought low, and I know how to abound. This is Paul talking. In any and every circumstance. Again, he knows how to be brought low and knows how to be dragging his behind across the floor and standing strong. That's how he feels, right? And in every circumstance, listen to this. He says, I've learned the secret of facing plenty and hunger. He says, abundance and need. I can do all things through him who strengthens me. Even Paul went through down times. In fact, Paul went through several times of not just down. Again, a lot of these guys in Scripture, we can't even touch because they went through so much worse stuff than us. Than the worst day that we've ever had doesn't come close to the issues and the struggles that some people in the Bible and throughout history have endured. But yet they've stood strong. So just pause just for a second here. If they have stood strong in the middle of their stuff, then there is a possibility that you and I should have the ability to stand in the middle of our stuff. When in the next hour, we may forget what I just said because of stuff, because of situations, because of the emotions that are involved in life, right? But if other people have gone through stuff and have stood strong, yeah, they've wavered a little bit. They've gotten a little emotional. They've gotten discouraged. They've gotten upset. Yep. But it says right here in chapter 4, verse number 13, that I can do all things through God who gives me strength. Now, James is another example of, there's so much that I don't understand in the Scripture, but James 1:12 says, blessed is the man who remains steadfast under trial. Blessed is the man who's stays strong under difficulty, my paraphrase. For when he has stood the test, he will receive the crown of life which God has promised to those who love him. Again, the beginning of verse 12. Blessed is he or she who remains steadfast under trial. Blessed is the man, I'll just use these words, who remains steadfast. Blessed, blessed, blessed. So we're blessed when we stay strong in the middle of the stuff. So another text in the Bible says that when we're up and down, we're not being very strong. Is it often tempting to be up and down in the middle of the stuff? Absolutely. Does it happen to all of us? Absolutely. Is it easy to not be wishy-washy up and down in the middle of the stuff? No. I mean, I do a lot of inspirational stuff online. And I have this particular place that I download video clips. And I was going to put some verbiage up there about inspirational. And this particular scene was a guy on a boat. And I'm looking at the screen, and the boat's moving up and down and up. And I'm starting to get seasick watching just the image on the screen. We were on a boat out last year or something out in the bay, long story behind it, but we came into this choppy water, and we're up and in, and my stomach's woozing, and other people's heads are wobbling, because you know what? Life has a way of doing that, doesn't it? So what I did, I think I shared this before, was instead of being on the outskirts of the boat where most people were, guess where I got? I went on the inside, where I wasn't watching the horizon do this. Because the horizon was doing up and down, the spray and people were getting wet. I went in there and no joke, I went inside the cabin and I put my head down. And this is going to sound bizarre. It's probably going to sound mentally unstable. But what I did then was I planted an image in my head of a plain, steady horizon. Even though the boat around me was literally doing some crazy stuff, right? I wonder how many of us have a lot of crazy stuff going around us because we're watching what's going on around us instead of getting to the inside of where our peace, P-E-A-C-E, really can be. And that takes a proactive step of turning your eyes from what you're seeing to a place of P-E-A-C-E, peace. And that's not easy. That takes a proactive step, sometimes a big proactive step on your life, in your life, in my life. When oftentimes in the middle of the up and down turmoil of the sea and the difficulty, that you forget. I've forgotten so many times in the middle of the stuff that I have to go to my peace place, P-E-A-C-E place. Because if I don't, then I'm going to continue to get seasick, and it's going to get ugly real fast. I'm not going to get into detail about that. But when you get seasick, ugly stuff happens, right? Nasty stuff happens. So you and I have a responsibility to find our place of peace in the middle of our difficulty, in the middle of our struggle. Mark Thornton writes, "As I was getting ready to come to church today, I was helping my son to take a bath, and quite frankly, he didn't want to have a bath, especially because he couldn't sit and play in the tub for a while. So he resisted and complained and made it difficult, but when we struggled through it and got him clean for the most part, as you know, I was finishing up, I told him to stand up and get out so we could get him dried off and dressed for church, for which he responded, 'I can't.' I replied, 'What do you mean you can't?' He scowled at me and said, 'Daddy, I can't.' Now, unfortunately, we've been through this routine before, so I knew how to respond. 'You mean you don't want to, right?' For which he begrudgingly nodded. It wasn't that he couldn't get out. He didn't want to get out of the bathtub. He wanted to stay and play for a while. And I couldn't help but think that this is so similar to the way we respond to God's call. He asks us to do something and we respond, 'Lord God, I can't. I'm too old. I'm too young. I'm not ready. I'm too busy. I've had too many other things going.' But deep down, what we're really saying is, 'I don't want to. I don't want to do it. I don't want to change. I don't want to sacrifice. I don't want to stretch.' And life, even in the middle of your stuff, even in the middle of your difficulty, even in the middle of the most painful times in your life, that you and I have the opportunity to stretch and do things that we didn't think was even possible. Because, as I've said it now 4 or 5 times, if other people have done it, if other people have gone through far worse stuff than us, then I think we have the potential, we have the power to do as much or more stuff for good to benefit other people in their lives. Ben Carson wrote, he says, "Success is determined not by whether or not you face obstacles, but by your reaction to them. And if you look at these obstacles as a containing fence," again, if you look at these obstacles as a containing fence, he says, if you look at them as a hurdle, he says, if you look at them as a containing fence, they become the excuse for failure. If you look at them as a hurdle, each one strengthens you for the next." More and more I'm seeing in my own life and the lives of other people that in a variety of situations, in a variety of struggles and environments, that those people who push through stuff when they don't feel like it, but they show up and they do what they don't feel like doing, are the ones who get ahead the best and the fastest, versus people who wait for their emotions to catch up to what their minds are telling them that they need to do. I'll say it a different way. Oftentimes you have to do the stuff that you know you need to do, and then your emotions will catch up to it. Versus if you wait for your emotions to lead you to do these great things, you're going to wait a very long time, decades, to catch up to do the things that you need to do. So in the middle of your what now, what are you going to do? Are you going to stop? Are you going to whine? Are you going to complain? Are you going to look back and see all the lives of the people who've been there and done that, who've gone through so much more stuff than you, and they did some awesome things? They changed the world, actually, in the middle of their stuff, in the middle of their self-doubt, in the middle of their struggle, in the middle of their pain. So I'm asking you today that in the middle of your pain, in the middle of your struggle, that you have really just 2 choices. You have a choice to stop and to give up, or to get your mind and your heart and your courage and your scripture and your God in order and keep moving forward in the middle of the stuff. Because even in the valley of the shadow of death, David wrote, that God will be with you. God will be with you in the middle of the shadow. So that's what I want you and I to do in the middle of our shadow, in the middle of our difficulty, in the middle of our what now? What else could happen? Yeah, there's a lot that could still happen. But in the middle of it, God's still in control. I'm so fired up about my fourth book that came out. It's called Build Your Foundation, 68 Building Blocks for a Successful and Rewarding Life. I've compressed about 25 years of knowledge, experience, and learning from a lot of people to help you in your life. You can get a copy of it over at TremendousLifeBooks.com. Again, TremendousLifeBooks.com. Here's some more information about it. For the last 25 years, I've visited with thousands of people in their homes. Many of these people I've met with have no goals, no dreams, no ambitions, and no roadmap for their life. I've seen so many people sitting on their front porches watching life go by. In 2006, my wife and I started building our home with bedrooms for each of our six kids. I always made sure that the foundation of our home was solid. I didn't want to take any chances with the lives of my family. So it is with life. My book, Build Your Foundation, 68 Building Blocks of a Successful, Rewarding Life, is jammed full of ideas that can help you today. My book is a collection of ideas and short stories really designed to help you turn your life around and to help impact the people that you care about and that you love so much. Whether you're just beginning to lay your foundation or you've already built your life but need to shore up some weak spots, Build Your Foundation will help you fortify yourself for a lifetime of success and to give you the courage to go for your dreams in life. Don't miss out on what you can accomplish. You can scale any height and achieve any goal. This book will help you get there. I have a passion to help millions of people change their lives. This book is easy to read, has short chapters, and can help you right now and change your life today. I believe in you. Thank you so much for listening to the John Carver Show. If you want more information about me, just simply go to my website, www.johnwcarver.com. Again, thanks so much for listening to the show today, and remember, I believe in you.
Thank you for listening to The John Carver Show. Please tune in again right here Monday through Friday for more insights and opinions on how you can reach your goals and dreams in life.